This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're continuing our coverage of COVID-19 and mental health. So first off, we'll take a quick look at how things are in the UK and around the world. So here, a potential vaccine, drug and blood treatments for COVID-19 have all become human trials, and similar trials are being seen in several other countries as well. This has been really positive to see because these kind of trials would never actually take place this soon under normal circumstances. In fact, it wouldn't even be legal in most cases for them to occur so early on. But it's been great to see how the scientific community are really galvanizing with the support of government to try and get these solutions through as quickly as possible. One of the things I've seen a lot of confusion around in the media is the wording around there not being a cure, but there is still support available for those dealing with COVID-19. It is accurate that there isn't a cure. We don't have a drug that cures COVID. We don't have a vaccine that prevents it. But there are treatments available that support your immune system. So such as being on a ventilator, having oxygen, and then there's general nursing best practices as well that go alongside that, and potentially drugs and vitamins and supplements that can be given to support your immune system. But none of them are directly targeted at curing COVID. Instead, there are existing tools that have been found to be effective in helping your own body's immune system. So the trials that are starting now are really exciting because they include a vaccine, which could, of course, if rolled out nationwide, be the ultimate solution to the pandemic and the way to prevent any future outbreaks. There's also treatments being looked into of transferring plasma from blood from those who have recovered from COVID-19 to patients currently experiencing it. They're finding that the antibodies that are built up from surviving this virus can be used to help treat those that are still experiencing it. Also, there are drugs for other conditions that doctors and scientists are finding may be relevant to treating COVID-19 and could be adapted as a drug specifically for this condition. Most of these trials have been rolled out in the last week or two, at least within the UK. So it's really rapid expansion of potential solutions.
It's amazing, isn't it? The amount of work scientifically and the research. And it just goes to show how we can come together in lots of ways that we've talked about. But, you know, from a medical scientific research point of view, I think it's amazing the amount of work that's being done.
And it's so vital because, as we know, the social distancing, the lockdown measures, PPE, all these things we've talked about, they only go so far if we don't have effective treatment, particularly the discussion around a vaccine. And so whilst a vaccine certainly isn't going to come imminently, I am confident that it will be available far sooner than the amount of time vaccines normally take to develop. And that is exciting and that is impressive. And ultimately, a massive part of our lives being able to return to normal.
Absolutely. I just think on the other side, you know, these kind of things take so long normally to develop and test before they're rolled out. That is something that obviously will be being taken into account when there's such an emergency and such a desperate need.
None of this, though, is to understate the risks involved and the bravery of those people that are involved in the human trials. In many cases, people have to be in the middle of fighting the virus for the scientists to find out what they need to and really test the effectiveness. It's incredible that people, when they can be so ill, for the sake of others, are prepared to test new treatments. You know, I can hardly imagine how you would make a decision like that. And of course, it's no surprise to me that many of the people that are volunteering are doctors, are medical professionals that are already so invested in people's health. And they're putting themselves at risk again in order to further that. And we talked a little bit there about how this factors into lifting lockdown. And there's been some positives around the world with that as well. Many countries are considering the lockdown being lifted. Certainly all of those who have seen the peak of this wave of the pandemic are considering how and when to lift these lockdowns, including our own government. In Italy, as we know, one of the worst affected countries, and in fact, they were the worst affected country for a period of time. The lockdown is continuing to be eased there. More shops are opening, and the construction and manufacturing industries are mostly going back to work now. And it's something that only a few weeks ago would be quite difficult to imagine, when all you were used to was seeing these empty streets across the country, to then see on the news Rome, people walking, many of them exercising for the first time in as much as 9 weeks.
Yeah.
Outside, as we know, that's where Francesca's from. So no doubt she's delighted.
Well, yeah. And as I've mentioned before on the show, my sister lives in Spain, well, Tenerife, in Santa Cruz, but they are governed by Spain and the Spanish laws. She posted me a picture this morning. Woohoo! My first exercise in 9 weeks. And they are under structured lockdowns. Not lockdown, the opposite. Getting out.
Yeah, structured lifting of lockdown.
So they can have a general person with general health, adult person can have, I think they're 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. in the morning. And then the elderly and then children. So it's already structured. A few funny things, like they can walk with somebody that they live with, but they can't exercise with somebody that they live with. But unlike us, you know, they've been allowed to like go to the shops, but they've had no exercise. Like here, I could go out for an hour to exercise, but I can go out for 3 hours and walk. Nobody's going to come and say, "We've noticed you've been out for 3 hours, Danielle, like get in." If I'm running on my own or whatever, around my area where I live, there's no one to be stopping that. But where she is, there's army out on the street and police and whatever. So how nice is it for them? She's on an island like Tenerife. She lives in the centre of Santa Cruz, but there's a nice beach and sea. So her first exercise, she's like in a shorts, little crop top, sun shining, headphones in. She's like, woohoo, I'm out. But it, you know, just goes to show she's just so grateful for that time. And you know, what she's been through for 9 weeks, you know, in an apartment block where there's other elderly people and, you know, people that are not getting out at all. It's been really hard going.
She would appreciate you say that, other elderly people, as if she's elderly.
No, she's 30. She's nowhere near elderly. But yeah, where there are elderly people. So, yeah, so it's just interesting that you're saying Europe are starting to kind of, you know, relax their measures a little bit. And she's been out today for the first time.
Right. And it's been interesting, particularly with Spain, how they've done that with the age groups. They've divided up. I think it's quite a clever measure because it's clear and it's a way of protecting different levels of vulnerability and limiting the amount of people going out, because, of course, that's a massive concern here. And the government here have been gradually rolling out guidance on how businesses should safely return to normal work. And one of the measures within that is staggering the times at which people start and finish work so that we don't return to having rush hour immediately. And so I think in a similar way, Spain are doing a version of that where they're trying to prevent us going too back to our normal routines and all being out, you know, maybe for our lunch times or maybe on the way to and from work, and instead spread that out and therefore keep people distant from each other and keep the social distancing in a way that's not as the police going around and telling people to step back from each other.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I feel like we are in a privileged position with where we're at in this, that Boris Johnson has announced we're past the peak.
But for the first time, we are past the peak of this disease. We're past the peak and we're on the downward slope.
And like many countries across Europe, there's a very clear decline in number of cases, number of active cases, number of critical cases. It's all going down. And so in many ways, I feel there's a privilege in that when there are countries that are further behind in the pandemic in terms of the spread, you know, not that they aren't taking precautions, but maybe their upsurge in cases is still continuing and they haven't yet reached the peak. So it'll be interesting to see that potentially we could be getting out of lockdown whilst other countries remain entirely in it and may not even be at their peak. In particular, I've been keeping an eye on Russia and India, who are still in the process of their cases rising pretty much day on day. And as two of the biggest nations in the world, it is very worrying how massive their peak could be. And, you know, are they going to be prepared for that? Of course, both of them are in lockdown at the moment, and particularly India implemented lockdown very early in terms of the spread, although it ended up being around a similar time, if I remember rightly. And on the subject of unpreparedness, I have another political piece I've prepared. Again, we generally avoid politics as much as we can on the show, but given the current circumstances, government decisions impact so directly how each one of us is living and the health of the nation. Right now, I feel it's excusable to talk about politics a little bit more. And so I've prepared a piece relating to testing, which, of course, is a massive factor in the pandemic here and across the world. You ready, Danielle?
I'm ready.
The government set an ambitious target for 100,000 COVID tests to be carried out per day by the end of April, after previously missing its target of 25,000 tests a day to be achieved by mid-March. Whilst recording last week, I expressed a concern as testing levels had been below 20,000 for most days in April, even with the reassurances from Health Secretary Matt Hancock that the government were on track. As we know, testing is vital in monitoring the spread of COVID-19 and saving lives. Consequently, without robust and expansive enough testing, it will also be difficult to lift lockdown measures, something that continues to have a massive mental health implication, with the charity Mind reporting that 2/3 of people are finding their mental health has already worsened during this lockdown. Last Thursday, on the 30th of April, the government reported that the testing goal had been reached. However, there were concerns raised over this claim. Here's how Rita Chakrabarty reported this on BBC News.
The Health Secretary has announced the government has reached its goal of 100,000 tests per day for coronavirus, a target that it set itself for the end of April. Matt Hancock said that yesterday 122,347 tests were provided. That includes nearly 40,000 test kits posted out, which may not yet have been used or returned to laboratories. Some frontline medical staff have said they are still struggling to get access to tests, and critics have called the government target a distraction.
40,000 tests posted out is not the same as these tests being completed. 2 days later, the testing figure on the 2nd of May has shrunk to 76,496. At a time of so much uncertainty, trust in the government is not only a massive factor in how safe we feel, but also to what extent the public listen to and follow guidance, thus being a factor in exactly how safe we are. A massive positive to end on is that many more people are now eligible for testing. At first, this was mainly restricted to patients in hospital, followed by healthcare and emergency services staff, then other essential workers and their families. In the last few days, this has been expanded even further to include anyone with symptoms who is over 65, cannot do their work from home, or is living with those just mentioned. So that's my prepared piece. Any thoughts you wanted to add on that?
Not really. I think you've said it all. I don't think really I need to add anything there.
Hopefully I've covered the key information there of how testing has been expanded. Of course, we're delighted that it has been expanded so much, but particularly with how it's expanded over the last few days to the 30th, then you start to wonder if this many tests were ready for posting out on a single day, could they have been sent out sooner than the final day of the government's deadline? Particularly when 2 days later, the figure has gone back down under the target again.
Oh, does spark a few questions, I guess.
It's been an interesting thing to watch the coverage of it. In the daily briefings coming up to the 30th, that was a constant question from journalists. Are you still on track to hit this target? How are you going to hit the target? Where are these tests coming from? And then you get these 40,000 tests posted out on the day of the deadline.
Yeah.
I don't imagine 40,000 tests arrived in one delivery. We're trying to get our coverage right. We only have a few days between recording and the episode going out. And even within that, things can change so drastically. Whereas normally the topics we cover, we're covering far more from a historical and personal experience perspective. You know, so we can bank episodes weeks in advance, months even.
Well, I think you're doing a brilliant job of adapting to that. And you're right, the way that you're saying it, we do have time normally. But I think that the way that we've had to adapt the show and the way that you are delivering it and the stats that are being found and the research and the information that you're giving in a timely way is a testament to you, Bob. And I think you should be proud of that. You always let the listeners know that things change quickly. Pat yourself on the back for that.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. It's great.
I literally patted myself on the back then.
Good.
But no, thank you. I do appreciate that. And of course, you're doing a brilliant job as well. Because with how fast things are moving, at times Danielle doesn't know what I'm going to say next. You know, sometimes when recording or if we take a brief break, there's an additional thing to talk about. And certainly the stats, as you know, from Worldometers, we read those out live. So, you know, our reaction is as up to date as possible. So next up, we'll talk a little bit about our predictions, or more so usually my predictions. So first off, linking to what I said last week, the government have announced that on Sunday they will share details on how phased lifting of lockdown will take place and hopefully clarity for people as they start to prepare for their lives to change and transition back out of this again. Although we don't yet know if this will include a proposed time frame. But luckily, there seems to be a really good understanding that we're better getting this right the first time round than getting it wrong and then having to go back into lockdown that will cause even more chaos.
I know. I don't even know where I stand on it all. You know, it's positive. You're right. The thing that comes into my head first about lifting the lockdown would be releasing people for their mental health and their needs and things that are going on in the home for children and adults.
I love the way you always refer to it as releasing.
No,
I don't know, maybe if it's like a parent thing, you're used to like letting the kids out,
yeah, and
play in the garden or something.
Yeah, for me, I just feel like, oh, the relief for those people that, you know, of whatever situation they might be in the home, because I worry about that more than anything else. I'm really conscious about that for, like I said, children and adults that are suffering indoors for a multitude of reasons. So that will be positive. On the other hand, I don't want us to have a second wave and a second peak and we all run out the door and then we all run back again. We're all, you know what I mean? So again, like I said on day one, I would not want to be the one making any of these decisions. Hard times for the decision makers, I think.
Absolutely agree with that.
But before you move on, sorry, if your prediction is correct, at least 2 months. When did you make it? 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago. I think off the top of my head, it would have been the 16th. Yeah. So that would bring us to the next government review, which is Thursday, the day this episode comes out. If they were to then continue the measures for the following 3 weeks and then gradually lift them from there, then that would be around that timescale. I spoke to the listeners will hear an interview with a friend of mine coming up as one of the bonuses, Camilla, and she said to me off air, you know, it's been a little bit spooky actually listening to you and your predictions. She's like, I wonder if you've got information the rest of us don't. And I was like, it's me watching hours of news, being really into stats and like strangely coming into my own in this in predictions that ultimately we don't really want, but I'm trying to keep them focused on positive stuff that we want to see happening. It's certainly helping me process everything, you know, getting an idea of what's going on. And then when those ideas come to fruition, there's a sort of reassurance in that. So it's nice to hear that other people that are listening are finding that too. And in terms of these difficult decisions, we do have some really positive numbers from the stats that we look at every week from Worldometers. So first off, he says, trying to get up the page, where has it gone? Danielle, I have 215 tabs open.
Oh my gosh. Organisation.
The maximum tabs you can have on an iPad is 500, and I know it because I've hit it before. Yes. Well, the thing is, I have so many things that I like want to read or want to like read again and come back to, and so I just end up stacking them back.
Oh my goodness, I'm surprised actually by that from you, because you're really, you're clicking in, you're clicking out, but that's why you're so, because you've got it all up, you've got like the whole, everything that you've read for the past week.
So maybe I do have information that other people, because no one else has that many things open.
Yeah.
I've got up the page. So the first stat we look at is of the active cases globally, how many are considered serious or critical? Really delighted to say that is continuing to stay low at 2%. And in fact, for all that the cases are going up in terms of how many people are being diagnosed as testing has expanded and rolled out further across the world, the number of serious or critical cases is actually going up and down. It's not, you know, it's not surging up. So that's really positive to see. And of course, the proportion 2% is brilliantly low and likely even lower if we include those who are asymptomatic or haven't yet been tested.
Yeah.
So the total number of people that have recovered from a confirmed case of COVID-19 across the world now stands at least 1,165,871.
Wow.
So with everything happening, with all that we've discussed today, I'm just so delighted that we've now had over 1 million confirmed cases of recovery.
Yeah.
And that's an increase of over 250,000 just since last week. And so the last thing for our intro is, of course, our potential positive for the week. And it's been interesting talking to Kat about it off air, because I was saying this may be the episode in us covering this where we see a real shift, that this is potentially the last one where the good news and the bad news is so intense on either side, and perhaps there will be a gradual increasing of hope.
Maybe we're on the up, you think?
Yeah, I'm very cautious about saying it, but I do wonder if as a world we're on the upswing. Of course, it very much varies place to place, but we may be at the point now where we're starting to hear more good news, more people coming out of lockdown than going into it. Yeah.
I'm cautious. I'm looking out my window like you, saying, yeah, fingers crossed.
I know. And it is tricky because we're hopeful people, but then we're also quite realistic.
I am hopeful. And I know things are changing gradually. And we will get to a point one day where we feel like we're potentially back to a new normal or whatever that might be throughout the whole thing. You know, really try to maintain kind of some leveling rather than being too up or too down.
And that's a big part of the emotional complexity of this, I think, particularly from a mental health angle, that so often there can be a lot of guilt that comes with mental illness. And that's continually echoed by guests on our more regular episodes, where they may talk about guilt of feeling bad for themselves when other people have it worse, or they may talk about guilt around getting support when they know that services can be stretched. They'll feel guilt about, you know, potentially intrusive thoughts that they're having and things that are actually outside of their control and a part of the illness. And of course, the stigma encourages guilt to thrive, because so often the societal narrative is that mental illness is a fault in people, and it can be far too easy to internalize that at times. So I think when it comes to a situation like this, it becomes even more complicated. I can feel guilty at times anyway. You know, I'm aware of my privilege and my safety in so many ways compared to other people around the world. And that can eat at me at times. You know, if I'm feeling particularly depressed, it can be difficult to silence that of, well, what have you got to be depressed about comparatively? Although, of course, every person's mental illness
is their experience,
and it's a very personal thing. It's not comparable, and yet you can feel like it is.
Mm.
You know, and I've had that experience where I've been pressured to eat in situations, and other people's hunger has been used as a tool of persuasion. Wow. Why wouldn't you finish your plate when there's people that are starving? And not only is that a very harmful thing to potentially say to someone with an eating disorder, it implies a level of fault as well. that I have taken something from someone else, whereas I didn't create someone else's hunger personally any more than they created my mental illness. But there are things that we can all do to be kinder. That goes beyond whether or not you eat a meal or not. That's about far bigger gestures and far more people being involved in making really seismic change. I'm slightly losing my point here a little bit by trying to make sure I've mentioned everything I should mention when speaking about this. The point I'm coming to is that it can be really difficult, particularly when you're experiencing mental ill health or you have a history of that, to know how to feel right now. That both of us are having good days and bad days. And on the good days, that can come with guilt because you think, well, how am I enjoying myself? How am I finding some parts of lockdown enjoyable when so many people are suffering and are very, very ill? But I think a lot of it has to just be looked at as personal responsibility. And if for you the pressing issue is your mental health, then by all means, focus on that. Try not to feel guilty about it. Try and be as proactive as you can, because that's allowed to be your focus. You know, right now the focus is so much, understandably, on physical health, but that doesn't mean our mental health should be suffering. And of course, there are people that if their mental health gets bad enough, they then go into hospital themselves. So it's perfectly fair to take your enjoyment where you can, to see the positives where you can. That's very much what we're trying to do and how we're getting through this. But that is never to ignore the varying ways in which people are suffering. But I want every person to be looked after and to look after themselves as best as they can right now. You know, that is how we get through this as a nation. And hopefully that fortified care will carry us through into a brighter future.
Oh, I love that sentiment. So true. I think, like we've mentioned, people who may feel privileged, who also feel guilty. And that is something that can affect their mental health, regardless of whether they've ever had a mental illness before and generally live quite healthily with regard to, you know, their mind. And this pandemic has sparked lots of different feelings in lots of different people coming from completely different backgrounds. As you said, as a nation, as society, as a human race, we have to look after each other and support that.
And that's a nuanced complexity of healthcare in general, that we may see people, particularly celebrities, that are isolating in mansions and seem to actually be having a lot of fun and comfort during all of this, which of course is such a stark contrast to those that are infected and those that are struggling the most. But that doesn't take away that there are complexities that can exist there too, that maybe someone that's, you know, a pop star and is outgoing and seems to have it all together, their music, their creativity, as we've covered on the show, may be a part of their coping mechanism with mental illness. So I wasn't really planning to talk about any of those themes we've just brought up, but I think they're important and they're timely. And this is what happens. We're all having a lot of time to reflect and different things are coming up. I'm someone that's well documented on the pod being very against comparison culture from a mental health point of view. And yet I can't help but feel it at times when we're all living our more social media lives. We're trying to navigate something that none of us were prepared for. So with all that said, we'll take a quick break in real life as well as an audio break. And we will be back talking all about this week's main theme and having a bit more of a kind of lighthearted and general discussion as hosts. We'll get into that in a moment, but first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. And we're back and here to talk all about uncertainty as a factor in our mental health right now. So first off, Danielle, how are you finding lockdown at this point? We're now 7 weeks in.
I think we are, aren't we? I think the schools shut 6 weeks ago on Friday. So this is our seventh Monday.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, I've been a bit pissed off this last week or two, a bit fed up with it. Just because I've had those moments of like, oh, what am I going to do today? What's today? almost like I've forgotten, and then it's hit me. And then I've been a bit pissed off, maybe 10 minutes, a bit like, oh, here we go again. And had to like pick myself up, really. And whereas before, for the first week or two, it was like, it was just a surprise. So every day you'd be like, right, oh no, we're not anywhere. Then the middle bit was quite like, oh, you got used to it. So you knew, so it wasn't a disappointment. And for some reason, I've started to have these, maybe because it really now feels so unnatural. I'm now having these, like, I'm almost like forgetting and then for a minute and then like thinking, I guess it's the pangs of missing people and missing being out and missing touching clothes in a shop or being comfortable going food shopping or, and then I'll think, oh, I can't see my mate. Like, I can't. Oh, yeah. Can't go and see her. So that's been a bit tricky. And so that's been a bit annoying. And then it's been a bit shrouded, if I'm honest, with this uncertainty.
Yeah. And I wonder actually, with you saying that, if that's kind of the next stage of adapting to lockdown, that in, I think, the last 2 weeks, we've talked a lot more about how we're getting into a new routine. We're doing the things that are good for our mental health. And we're for the most part, adjusting and doing pretty well. And so maybe now that we've kind of achieved that and found that positive, we're now like, okay, well, I'm doing okay, but I'm still missing all these things. The sort of challenge of building a new routine and finding some kind of peace and calm in everything that's going on. We've achieved that to an extent, and now our mind is drifting back to the outside world and the things that we don't have.
Yeah, you're right. We dug in, didn't we? Because we knew we had no choice. And maybe as well, we're starting to see more people out, maybe psychologically. Hearing about all these lifting of lockdowns and a more flexible approach around the world, it started to make you feel like the door's slightly open now. So psychologically, you're starting to think, what's going to come next? And so then that can have an impact if you think about it too long on your mental health really as well, because you start to think, is there any excitement that's coming? And then it's no, shut the door again. We're not going. No, we're not allowed out yet. You know, it's kind of this back and forward now because of this level of this change that's about to happen again, this new wave.
Right, exactly. That it almost feels kind of teasing that Boris has recovered. He's got back to work. The government have announced that they're going to share the next stage of information on what happens. And, you know, we're all sort of waiting with bated breath at this point, that almost there was some reassurance in the uncertainty before. Now we're seeing the first shoots of change and getting out of lockdown, that we were all like, oh, well, now I want that. now I want that briefing to be today.
Yeah. And also I've spoken to a couple of people where we're starting to think, oh my God, I haven't done what I wanted to do. If we are out now, next week, we've had 7 weeks at home. And people are starting to reflect on what I said I was going to do. What could I have done? Could I have learnt a language? Could I have trained more? Could I have done this? Could I have decorated, cleared up, you know, started that YouTube channel? You know what I mean? So then there's a bit of guilt coming in. Like, oh God, if you give me this again, I'd do this.
Right. And I think for me, there can even be a bit of fear to that, of time running out.
Yeah.
You know, that it's now like almost the reverse of, there was a feeling of time running out when I felt that the lockdown was becoming very imminent. And I was thinking, as you know, of all the random things of like, what if I can't buy from Lush? What if I'm not stocked up on cosmetics? What about, you know, skincare? Me moving my appointment forward so I could get to the hairdresser.
Yeah, you know, your chocolate shop that you love. What is it called? Your hot chocolate shop.
I mean, which one? Oh, Wittards, probably.
Yeah.
Love Wittards. So yeah, getting all these random things. And to be fair to me, the hairdressers did close 2 days later and Lush Cosmetics stopped taking orders for quite a few weeks. But ultimately, I'm fine. It was just things of like me trying to cling to some elements of normality. And now that we've almost settled into our new normal, now we've got the threat of, oh, well, I'm doing all these kind of lockdown projects and now you're saying that time could run out very quickly and I have to go back to my busy life. I think a lot of people that have had time to reflect on their life may not be looking forward to getting back to normal.
Somebody said to me the other day, I don't want lockdown to end.
Mm.
And I thought, I kind of see what you mean a bit. Some days.
And that's it. There definitely are better days than others. You reminded me of a tweet, actually, about achieving things that went viral from a account called Graham Seabrook. And it reads, most of it's in capitals, "This is not the free time you said you needed, were waiting for or dreaming of. This is a goddamn global emergency. You wanted space to think, to breathe, to create, to heal. This constant threat, fear and loss is not what you asked for or needed. Give yourself grace." And I found that interesting, particularly with something similar in her bonus episode this week. You know, she had really wanted more time for herself this year, and she's got it, but this is no way the version of it she wanted. And so, of course, we can say all this about having free time and being productive in it, but the reality very much depends on how well you're coping, how your mental health is, the wellness of those around you. You know?
Oh, I absolutely love that, especially in contrast to the tweet that's going around. We read it earlier on. Can you remember what that was?
That was one we talked about in James's bonus episode that's coming out soon. And that was the complete opposite. That was a business person saying that basically if you haven't achieved like learning a new skill during this time, then what you needed all along wasn't time, it was discipline.
I mean, I just can't believe that.
Well, it's one of these things, isn't it, where it's kind of short and snappy and it sort of makes sense on surface level. So I think a lot of people are drawn to it and sharing it around the internet. But when you actually think about it and the bigger context between beyond a few words.
Well, what it can do for people who are struggling with their mental health is just pile on a load of pressure. And for those who didn't think they were struggling with the mental health, pile on a load of pressure. When you really think about it, like, so I haven't been disciplined enough? And maybe I haven't, but how could I be? Look what we've been going through. Like, what you read out before, I think that's amazing. Like, this isn't the time that you asked for, that you've been longing for. If only I had a few hours at home each week, or a few days off work, or a month off work on a sabbatical, and could just enjoy reading, learning, changing, whatever, growing, healing. But that's not what this is.
I know. And also, what are you comparing it to? Being productive compared to what? It can't be compared to your normal pre-COVID life, because very little is the same. And then even within the lockdown, things are changing so rapidly. There isn't even the context to judge yourself by, and yet people are still falling foul of it. And that is quite concerning.
How have you been at the moment?
I think I've been doing pretty well, actually. And interestingly, given we've talked about this a few times now, a lot of the people that are struggling more are the friends that normally don't. You know, that a lot of my friends that have experienced, particularly of mental illness, but I guess of, you know, hardship and stress more broadly, like, for example, maybe their finances commonly go up and down. Many of those people are doing quite well and like kind of riding out the storm and focusing on mental health and the positives of, okay, what can I do? What productive stuff can I get done? And then actually the ones that normally seem to cope with life very well and seem incredibly stable, they're the ones that are maybe coming across a lot more difficulty, that perhaps because they were more content in stability beforehand, this has undermined them in a way that I've never been used to stability. And I'm used to, like, as well, being self-employed, I'm used to my finances being kind of chaotic at times. And so a lot of the changes I may be better able to cope with, whereas my friends with perhaps more linear lives or careers are suddenly the ones that are really needing the chat, honestly.
We're the copers.
Yeah, and that's been quite surreal to say, but it's also something that I think is worth remembering to balance, that, you know, it could be very easy for me to get dragged into rescue complex and like, okay, how can I mind all my friends and how can I make this the thing that I'm doing productively in COVID? Whereas that could very easily overwhelm me and drag my mood down if I put all of my focus into making sure all of my friends are okay, which unfortunately, with everything that's going on, is a bit of a fool's errand. There is no certainty that everyone is going to be okay. And that's what's so scary about it.
It's interesting because just going back to your point about us being okay, well, you know, as being seeming to manage a little bit more, I had a Zoom video family thing again, and we had one of our past guests, Sharon Rose, who was on our family Zoom chat. She came on the podcast maybe about a year ago now.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, it's quite a while, wasn't it? She spoke about music, I think, and creativity, helping with her mental health. She's a full-time guardian of her grandson, who I think is 6, and he struggles with his mental health, various difficulties from birth, and Sharon's recovering from breast cancer, she's been in recovery now for a long time, and she's kind of fit and well. But they've really stayed indoors and isolated because she still is at risk. And Sharon came on and really interesting said, you know what, though, I feel like I'm welcoming people to my world all of a sudden because I've got this grandchild that I look after full time. I'm always worrying about his health, my health. I don't have babysitters. I can't go out when I want. I can't work because I look after him now and I'm recovering from ill health and stuff. And she's like, for once, it's like everybody's on my level. I actually feel like I can manage this more than everybody else that is around me. It's exactly what we're saying. It's funny how the tables turn, really.
Yeah, and it's quite a difficult one to articulate, because what I don't like is there has been a lot of this rhetoric around this being a great equalizer. And I don't agree with that, because, you know, there is a big difference between the setup that people have, you know, where they're isolating, how much pressure they've got at home, how safe their home may or may not be. Of course, plenty of people without homes that luckily the government are doing a lot to support. There's factors in terms of, like we've discussed, around finance. You know, if you've got more of a financial buffer, then actually hibernating and being in lockdown for a little while can feel a lot more like a holiday.
Yeah.
Than someone that has no idea if they can buy food the next week. And so I disagree with the idea of a great equalizer, but I do agree that now is giving a lot more insight into struggles people already had.
Mm.
I think we're all a lot more aware of each other's home setups. And I think there's something really empowering about that, whether it's just checking in on your friends and getting a better idea of their day-to-day, whether it's the statistics in the media showing that this many people feel lonely and that that's not necessarily a new thing, but we're focusing more on it now, right up to, you know, seeing news presenters reporting from home and there being a sort of cozy and strange familiarity to seeing inside their home office. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many levels to this, but in particular, loneliness and the uncertainty around when you'll see people is really on my mind today. As you know, I'm a big fan of Victoria Derbyshire and I love to watch her present her BBC News show. And this morning she did a special feature on loneliness and it was so moving, you know, how she presented it. She spoke to an elderly person and she spoke to a lady with cerebral palsy who, because of health reasons, were needing to stay on the strictest form of lockdown. And it didn't show me anything that I didn't know, but I think it's so great that we are shining a light on how much isolation affects people, how essential human connection is to us and our mental health. And there was one part of the report in particular that just really got me, which was the guest with cerebral palsy called Anastasia was talking about her background as a carer, and as her health has deteriorated, she's had to stop doing that and now has to be in full lockdown in order to protect her health and the fragility around that. And the thing that really, really moved me about it was then Victoria went on to speaking to someone from the Red Cross and, you know, they were chatting about the government's initiatives and the NHS volunteers, and in particular what you're signed up to do of talking to people that are isolated, you know, giving them a phone call, making sure they're okay, giving them that really vital human connection and thought. And so Victoria went back to Anastasia and said, oh, would that be something that would interest you? Do you think that would help? She answered, but she straight away said, absolutely, that's something I would volunteer for. I would definitely think I can relate to people that are in isolation. I think I could really help with that. And Victoria was actually asking her, do you think this would help you? Yeah. But because she'd come from such a caring background and that was so much of who she was, she automatically defaulted to, of course I could help other people.
Wow.
You know, she didn't even see herself in that question.
Wow, that's beautiful.
It was a really emotional interview to watch, and yet still she's thinking so much about others and people that could be worse off.
Well, if that's not a lesson for us all, eh?
Yeah. So I'm really glad to see that issues like loneliness are being brought up. And however much we're worried about uncertainty around the lockdown, around the virus, around work, around finance, we have people around us to speak to. We have people at home. We have large support networks of people. We have a platform like this. You know, honestly, you wouldn't believe the amount of extroverted friends I speak to that it's like I'm interviewing them sometimes because I ask them one question and they just are so keen to chat because they've not been able to speak to people as they normally would. And it's like a wall of sound. And so, you know, however difficult it is for us, I'm so glad that we're not isolated in that way.
I'm in a moment.
But I guess to start rounding up, I do think it's getting better, that we have to just bear through this, and things are going to be unclear for a little bit longer. And that's for good reason. That's been a question in a few of the daily briefings recently around how the government will change their messaging, because so much of the focus has been on the slogan of stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives. And as we've talked about, there's been so much anxiety around the threat. There's been so much pressure to stay at home. And I do worry about if that could create an agoraphobia in a lot of people.
Mm.
That fear of going outside could remain even after the threat's gone. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how governments around the world start to change their messaging, because they can't pretend like everything's okay again. But then they also need to majorly change how they're phrasing these things to try and reduce people's fear.
Absolutely. That's great, actually. I was thinking about next week's episode. It made me think about that, the next step, actually, from the uncertainty. Maybe not the next step, but a little bit around what you said. I was going to say this to you off air to remind me.
That's okay.
I think it's a great next episode, actually, because when we were talking about loneliness then, it made me think about my mum and her anxiety and the fact that we're pushing her a lot to get out more. And the fact that she, even though she's struggling being on her own, she hasn't had physical contact, she doesn't go out half as much as what we'd like her to or we think would benefit her. I worry that this and her being okay is going to make her bubble get even smaller, and it's going to be a load more steps again to try and get her out of her comfort zone, being a bit at home. I just thought it just reminded me then of actually there's a lot of people that aren't going to want to come out of this lockdown, that have got quite comfortable being at home. Not just us saying, actually, it's quite nice on some days just being at home chilling, but those that are living with mental illness, quite struggling to some of our fears, you know what I mean? Like a bit nervous, depression and anxiety, and that could build. I now should go out because the lockdown's been lifted, but I actually don't want to, and I'm going to shut my curtains. I was just thinking then, and I'm sorry it's gone a bit pear because you're rounding up really well. I just wanted to say it as I remembered it, that I think that might be a good episode.
I think that's a really good point. And one thing you've got me thinking about there as potentially a solution to a lot of this comes back to what we were talking about earlier around guilt, around you can feel that if you're doing okay, then you've just got to grin and bear it and just seem strong for everyone. And I really disagree with that. So I think for all those people that are out there and do feel like they're getting on okay and see that the virus hasn't affected them as badly as it's affected a lot of people, that's no reason then to socially isolate. It's still absolutely okay and valid and understandable to want to have a phone call with a friend and be like, this is so weird. This is so uncertain. Let's talk about it. You know, we don't all need to have a cohesive narrative. We don't all need to be struggling in order to get the help. If we can keep chatting, I think that's a really clear way of preventing this social isolation, that people just get into a habit of being lonely. You know, that there can be a scary safety in that. You know, and we talk about that with mental illness sometimes, that sometimes you have enough experience of depression and it starts to get familiar and you think it's safe and it's actually the very thing holding you back and maybe stopping you getting support is giving into the fears of whatever condition you may be experiencing that might be worse right now.
Absolutely.
So I guess that's the message for the end of this one. Whoever you are, however well you think you're coping, keep speaking to people. Keep checking in, keep chatting, schedule calls so you have things to look forward to, check on your strong friends, because this is affecting every one of us.
Preach.
I don't have get on a roll sometimes, do I? All right, so we'll finish up there. Thank you again for joining me from the comfort of your room.
I love it.
Your mostly kid-free room.
Mostly, so they pop in and right now I can hear the shower going and bless them. They're whispering. My oldest one's telling the little one, shh, mommy's still recording, shh. So they're trying to have a shower in silence. Bless them.
I think that's so cool. Their mum is a podcaster. How modern. And they understand all of this stuff. You know, they may end up with shows of their own one day and they'll know all about staying quiet for recordings. There's a life skill.
How are you? How did you become a podcaster? How are you this internet guru? And I'm like, oh, we grew up with it.
Second generation microphone. Podcaster.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, well, you have a good week, Bob.
You too. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.